Jazz, 91.9 WCLK, Atlanta's jazz station, Jamal Ahmed, and the Soul of Jazz on this Wednesday afternoon. That was music coming from Gerald Albright and Norman Brown giving us their take on my jam, Champagne Life. And of course, you guys are big fans of that one, and I'm so excited right now because this is my very first time speaking with the man. And so honored to have the man, Mr. Norman Brown, in the studio. How you doing, Norman?
I'm doing great, brother. How about yourself? Thanks, man, for having me here.
No, it's a blessing to have you, man. It's a blessing to have you, man. No, I didn't know. You are now an ATLian.
Absolutely. I'm an ATLian.
That's what we're calling it nowadays.
Oh, I got it. First time I heard that term. Yeah, I moved here in 2013.
Okay, how you liking it so far?
Man, I'm loving it down here. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm out south, and I really like it. And I love flying out of this airport, man. I can get to all my gigs on one flight usually now.
Exactly. Used to not be like that, but now it is. Now it is. So I want to talk to you, Norman, because there's so much we need to cover. We were just talking over off mic, and I said, this guy is just, it's like, do you get any sleep, man? Because you're working on so many different projects along with your own stuff.
Absolutely. I live on naps, my man. Squeeze in here, squeeze in there. It's a fortunate thing, though. I am not complaining. I feel totally grateful. And I try to keep an attitude of gratitude. You get tired, man, but, you know, you got to keep pushing forward.
Exactly. Now, you're from Kansas City, right?
I grew up in Kansas City. I was born in Louisiana. Absolutely.
Got you. So, I mean, you know, for folk that really know the history of jazz music, Kansas City is one of those premier jazz towns.
Oh, absolutely. We had it going on there, man. I call it Charlie Parker country.
That's right.
Yeah, man. Absolutely.
What was it like growing up there?
Oh, dude, it was incredible. I'm going to go back real early. When I first started playing, I was about 8 years old. I lived on a block, and I'm going to tell you, within like a four-block radius, front, back, and side of me, there were so many musicians. It was incredible. Across the street was a family. I mean, it was like 8 of them. 6 of them played instruments. They had their own band. Next door to them was a drummer. Down the street was a bass player. Around the corner was a family. They had 2 sets of triplets. They had a gospel group.
2 sets of triplets.
Yeah. This is what I grew up around, man. Cats playing everywhere. It was incredible.
Wow. Yeah. So you know, growing up there, when did the bug bite you to really pick up the guitar? And who was that person that you saw? I mean, be it personal, that you saw that said, wow, the guitar is an incredible instrument.
It was my brother. My older brother, Popsicle, man. He had a little band, again, and my mother used to let them set up in the living room, practice. And I remember the first time I saw that, I was blown away. They were saying it was guitar, bass, and drums. And I just wanted to play the guitar after that. So I would sneak and play his guitar whenever he'd leave the house.
How old were you then at that time?
I was 8 then.
Okay.
Yeah, and he busted me one day. Man, I thought I was in for it, but he said, man, I didn't know you wanted to play. Play me something. I was working on some Hendrix. I was trying to learn me some Jimi Hendrix, you know. He said, dude, I didn't know you wanted to play the guitar. You play it anytime you want to play it. And he's been my champion ever since.
Oh, that's wonderful, man. Yeah, that's
absolutely
wonderful.
I had great family support.
Exactly. It's very important. So when you, you know, start playing with your brother, when did you kind of get into that serious mode, you know, of getting your own guitar and really hashing it out?
It was really right away. It really was. I mean, the first time I snuck and played it and picked it up, something hit me upside the head, man. And that's why I kept doing it over and over. I mean, he was a teenager, so he was gone a lot, you know. And I had a lot of time to mess with it. And that thing, man, I knew right away, this is what I wanted to do. I really did. And finally, like I said, after he called me about a year or so into that, he talked my father into getting me one. He says, one day he came to me, it was Saturday morning, he woke me up. He says, man, I'm going to hang out with Daddy today, and I'm going to make sure we get you a guitar. We're going to come home tonight with a guitar for you. Watch. And sure enough, Saturday evening, they come through the house. He had this tiger striped guitar and an amplifier that they bought from the pawn shop, man. That dude was my hero, dude.
Oh, man. That's a beautiful story right there, man.
Man, I was blown away.
Wow. So outside of your brother, and you just mentioned Hendrix, who was like that guitar god for you at that time that just really blew you away?
At that time, it was Jimmy. And then I got hit. My father saw that I was serious. He says, man, come down to the basement and listen to this. And he put on Wes Montgomery.
Oh, yeah.
Changed the game.
What was it about, and what is it about Wes Montgomery that makes him so unique and just the man?
To me, I guess at that time, I don't know if I knew all of this, but, you know, right now, his chord soloing, that smooth sound he had playing with the thumb. No other guitar sounded like that. Mm. And those octaves, man. Mm. When I heard that octave thing, that was incredible to me. Two notes at one time, that smoothly and that fluently.
Right.
And then he would do it with chords as well. And then he would play the bebop lines just like the horn players played, but with his thumb.
Mm.
It was incredible.
And wasn't he self-taught?
He was self-taught, absolutely. And he didn't start until late in life. I mean, late 20s or something like early 30s or something like that.
Wow.
And he left in his 40s.
Hmm.
He did a lot in that time.
So he had a very quick career.
Absolutely, man.
Incredible. Talk about someone, because here's a man that you don't really hear a lot of people talk about, Charlie Christian. Who really was like the one who set guitar up for everybody, no matter, not just jazz, but for all guitarists, because he was one of the first guys to really plug in and play electric guitar in the 1940s.
Oh, absolutely. Charlie Christian was the man. I didn't get hip to Charlie Christian until after studying Wes and a lot of the jazz greats, you know. And then I started tracing it back, and it went back to Charlie Christian.
Mm.
And Benson told me the same thing. George Benson told me the same thing. Man, you got to listen to Charlie Christian, you know. but, yeah, his thing was very cool. He swung really hard. You know, he had that bop swing on his playing. Really, it was just so deep, that groove.
Yeah.
And to me, that's how I identify him, along with those eighth notes, the way he played them. Yeah.
Exactly. You just mentioned George Benson. And, you know, of course, we here are huge supporters of George Benson. I've interviewed him a few times. What about George Benson? Because he's in that entire chain as well.
George came next.
Mm.
So it was Jimmy, then Wes was the god. And then my sister ran in the house one day with this album. She said, Norman, you got to hear this guitar player. You got to hear him. He's singing with the guitar. It was the Breezin' album.
Mm.
And she put it on for me. And I'm going to tell you, man, it tripped me out at first, because I was so into Wes. I felt like, man, this guy almost played as good as Wes. What? What is that? You know, it kind of messed me up a little bit, and I didn't want to listen to it.
Mm.
And she kept saying, no, you go back and listen to that record and listen to it. And I caught it, and then I was studying George from then on.
Wow. So when did you become professional? When did you say, I'm going to start gigging, I'm going to start going into the clubs and playing, and hopefully people will start taking me seriously as a guitarist?
I started probably 12. I was playing in talent shows in school.
Mm.
Then I got into a band. I was in the, you know, elementary school, and I got into a band with some high school guys. So we were playing their Psych Ops. We were playing the YMCA. We were playing little city events like that. So I was doing it, man, really young. I mean, a few years after I started actually playing out. Later into my teens, now I'm probably about 12, 13, my father got me this permit to be able to work around alcohol. Because this band I was in, we had a manager that owned a club, and he wanted us to play there on the weekends. So I was playing in the clubs at 12 and 13.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. What did that teach you?
Oh, man, it was a trip. I was drinking orange juice and looking at people and just was blown away watching grown-ups party in the club. You know,
I know you got stories.
Oh, definitely. We had a drummer once, man. This cat played with his fingers.
Really?
He didn't use drumsticks.
What is that about?
I couldn't figure it out either. He says, man, the sticks get in my way.
And he got power out of playing with
fingers. He played
that
pocket all night long.
Interesting.
With his first finger and his first finger. That's one of the stories from that era.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, you know, speaking of eras, man, you know, I remember when your debut came out, what, 1992, 93?
Yep.
And you were on the now defunct Mo-Jazz record label. But at that time, Mo-Jazz was really a leading force in contemporary jazz music and bringing jazz to a whole nother generation. My generation at the time, I think when you came out, I was still a teenager, and I was actually starting college. And I remember hearing people talking about you, and I thought to myself, I said, it's been a while since we had a guitarist that people were talking about. I mean, the last person that I could remember, and I was still young remembering him, was Earl Klugh.
Yeah.
But after Earl Klugh, and there were other guys who came after Earl Klugh, but there wasn't like that guy who defined the instrument for a generation. And you kind of defined that instrument for my generation. Talk about that period of releasing music in the early 90s and being on Mo-Jazz.
Oh, it was cool. Their motto was the new face of jazz, Mo Jazz. And I was the first artist they signed. They signed a young saxophonist who had a hip hop kind of flavor, Jay Spencer.
Jay Spencer, God bless him, because he's passed away.
Yeah, he left too soon. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
So they had that thing going on. Then they signed Norman Connors, the gentleman of jazz, Captain Connors, and actually he's the one that hooked us up together.
Mm.
You know, he knew this guy Steve McKeever. Steve McKeever was vice president of Motown.
Mm.
But he wanted to have a jazz label. He had this vision to start a jazz label.
Wow.
And he wanted to find the artist first. Well, Norman brought him to me, and he told me what he wanted to do. He signed me to Motown. Mo Jazz wasn't even formed yet. He had no name for it or none of that. And he signed me to the label, and then we worked on my record, and he came up with the name, and then he started signing other artists. So along with myself, Norman Connors, Jay Spencer, he signed Foley.
Oh, yeah, the bassist. Yeah.
Miles Davis, music director, actually, for a long time. He played the piccolo bass.
Exactly.
And he was doing this whole kind of Sly and the Family Stone funk jazz thing.
Yeah,
it was funky, and it had some jazzy elements to it. And then he had his traditionalist, Eric Reed,
which was
Wynton Marsalis, his pianist at the time. Mm-hmm. So we had a great roster going on over there.
Even Mr. Frank McComb got his start over there at Mo Jazz.
Yeah, they signed Frank McComb. This cat came in there with that voice he has. And he plays his tail off, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, pianist, right? Sounding like Donny Hathaway.
Exactly, exactly.
He didn't like that, though. You know, he's like, oh, no. I said, well, dude, everybody tell me I sound like George Benson. I'm going to take it.
And I think he kind of grew into that, like, okay, because I think George Benson had to break him down and said, no, man, you take that credit, brother.
That's good.
You take that.
Yeah, that's good, yeah.
Mm. So when you were doing all those records in the early 90s, that was a whole different era than what we're dealing with now in the music industry. It was labels were still very vibrant. Jazz was selling. You guys were charting on the R&B chart. It was a really interesting time. Talk about that time.
Man, it was really a great time to come into the game. Mm. I mean, here I am with a major label, and they were treating me like the singers.
Exactly.
You know, I was getting that same kind of promotion and marketing, and I remember them trying to get me on the Arsenio Hall show.
Mm.
You know, and they kept saying, well, look, we're not going to give you Johnny Gill. Let's get Norman Brown on the show. You know what I mean? They were trying to leverage, you know, that kind of thing. Unfortunately, it never happened, but they were really trying, you know. Other major labels were signing major artists. We had decent budgets. And we would come out the gate selling really good numbers, man.
Mm-hmm.
And those were really golden times. Radio had no format in terms of singles. They would just go through the album and say, oh, this fits my region. We're going to play this one.
Exactly.
You know, my second record over there, After the Storm, I think all those songs were played on the radio.
Yeah, man, listen, my mentor, Kim Beatty, who held down this spot, he was the man and introduced me to that record. And it really was a defining record because at that time I had not heard a guitarist approach guitar in really this whole new kind of hip hop context. You know, the world was we were existing in this new hip hop world, and you just fit right in. But there was still that acknowledgement of the guys that came before you, the cats that played before you, like George Benson and Wes Montgomery. It was like Wes Montgomery over hip-hop beats, almost.
Yeah, man, I hear you. You know, Earl Clue told me that, too.
Mm.
I got a chance to meet Earl shortly after that record.
Really?
And he said that. He said, man, you found a way to keep the integrity of the musicianship and all those before you and be able to bring it into this contemporary light to get it in the light, you know,
exactly.
On the radio.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Fortunate, man. I just took in what came to me from God, you know.
That's right.
From the heavens.
That's right. That's right. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with guitarist Norman Brown. He's going to be playing with Mr. Kirk Whalum this upcoming Saturday. We're going to talk about that in a little while. But I also want to talk about your collaborations because you do so many collaborations. I mean, we just played your collaboration album with Mr. Gerald Albright. Which came out, what, about 2-3 years ago?
Yeah, 2011.
Like yeah, 2011. And you've also done work with BWB. You're a member. You're a B in BWB.
That's correct.
Talk about that project and how that whole thing came about.
Well, we were on Warner Brothers at the time. Myself, Kirk Whalum, and Rick Braun.
As individual artists.
As individual artists, right. So the head of jazz over there, Matt Pearson, came to us. He said, man, I'd love to hear you guys make a record together.
Mm.
We were like, well, of course. We all had mad respect for each other. And he produced the record. He picked the songs for the record. And we just went into the studio for a couple days and played these songs with a live band. And we came up with BWB.
Mm.
We did a tour after that. It was very successful. And then we split up. Everybody went their own separate ways in their careers for 11 years.
Mm.
And then we came back together in 2012. And we made Human Nature, which is a tribute to Michael Jackson.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. And I mean, that was a very special record because 3 years before, Michael had just passed away.
Yeah, absolutely. But the fans kept hitting us up, you know, in our individual spaces, saying, hey, man, I really love that Groovin' album y'all did. When is BWB going to get back together?
Mm.
And we all kept hearing that. So we decided, wait a minute, we better take a look and revisit this. And the industry was moving towards collaboration, especially on the concert side.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you guys had another record, or is it another record about to drop?
No, we have a new record about to drop.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Entitled?
Well, we haven't really given it a title. Maybe Turn Up. We're not sure. That's one of the tunes on there. We just put it in the can.
Okay.
I mean, like a month ago. So we're still tossing around titles. But the idea was the first two records were cover songs.
Mm.
The first one, we did a lot of different covers. The second one, we did Michael Jackson covers. We wanted to really establish ourselves as an entity now that we are and write all the music. So this is our first original record.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm, that's wonderful, man.
Drops in April, by the way.
Really? Okay, okay. Yeah. Who's putting it out?
This is going to be on Mac Avenue.
Mac Avenue. Okay, yeah. Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah. That's a good look right there,
exciting.
Man. That's a really good look. So I want to talk to you because we're excited about what's about to go down this upcoming Saturday over there at the historic Ebenezer Baptist Church, which everybody in Atlanta knows is just the hub of so many great things out of Atlanta. But you're doing something with a really good brother. I had a chance to hang out with him a few years ago. And, I mean, just one of the coolest cats in the game, Mr. Kirk Whalum. And he does a thing called a gospel according to jazz, where he's blending and merging jazz and gospel. But he's doing something for Christmas featuring Gerald Albright, yourself, John Studdard, Kevin Whalum. And I want to get her name right. Is it
Shalaya?
Shalaya. Okay. Talk about this show and how this show goes down.
This is a fantastic show, man. Kirk Whalum did a thing on putting this together.
Mm.
I think this is his fourth year doing this holiday show. And basically, we come out, man, we play a little bit of holiday music. We play a little bit of our individual music. But you get so much. You get these wonderful vocals. This young lady, Shalaya, is incredible. She sings like a songbird. Like
mm.
You can't, I mean, really. She's bad.
Wow.
She just come off tour with Stevie Wonder, by the way.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. That yeah. goes without saying.
Okay. She wrote the song to the movie Jumpin' the Broom.
Okay.
So
okay.
She's an accomplished writer. And then you got Kevin Whalum, which is Kirk's brother. He's a wonderful singer in the vein of Jerome, Bobby McFerrin.
Mm.
Does a lot of like a vocalizing.
Gotcha.
As well as beautiful singing. And not to mention Kirk's wonderful horn playing, man. His sax playing is killer. And Gerald Albright.
Yeah.
And then myself. John Stoddard is a beautiful singer, man. A wonderful writer. He wrote the song on my Grammy-winning record that Michael McDonald sang, I Still Believe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was on Warner Brothers with us at the time.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah. So it's a wonderful lineup. And we're giving you a little bit of everything. Christmas music, our own music. Fun stuff, and it's really a great show. Y'all have to come out and party with us.
Well, you know, man, it's speaking of Christmas music.
Celebrate with us.
Yeah, it's gonna be beautiful, man. It's gonna be beautiful. But speaking of Christmas music, you actually covered one of my all-time favorite Christmas records, which is a Charlie Brown Christmas, which was done originally by Vince Guaraldi, yeah. For those that remember. But I remember being a child and hearing that record. And just being blown away by some of those melodies. And you took some of them, especially Skating. I remember Skating and hearing that one as a young man. And it was something about that melody and the way that it was kind of like a cascade, how those notes just kind of cascaded down.
Yeah.
You picked it right up, man, and kind of brought it into the 21st century.
Thank you, man. That was on, I believe that was David Benoit's. He redid that album, actually.
Okay.
And he had me be a featured guest on that song. And I had a ball playing that. I thought that was so wonderful to play. In this particular show we're doing Saturday, I do another cut from that record. It's called Christmas Time Is Here.
Of course.
I do that solo guitar.
Oh wow!
Just solo guitar, nothing else. And that was one of my favorites. So I picked that one to do.
Yeah, I mean, and you walked in, man. You got your axe. I mean, do you go everywhere with your axe, man?
I don't leave it in the car. So if it's with me, it's gonna walk around with me.
Okay, understood now. That's all about protection, really. Yeah. I understand. Yeah. I understand. But yeah, man, I was like, man, every superhero's always got to have his weapon of choice with him, man.
Keep it close, baby. Keep it close. You never know when you have to do battle.
So I got to talk to you about your future endeavors, man, because this is a totally different, like I said, a totally different game when it comes to the music industry. Are you trying to release independent releases now and put out new music? What's happening with you?
Well, no, I've been doing collaborative records recently. My last solo record was 2010, Send Me My Love. Then 11, I did the collaboration with Gerald Albright.
Mm.
13, I did the BWB record. And now we just finished a new one, but I'm getting back to doing my solo record after this BWB.
Gotcha.
So my release is scheduled for September of 16.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm just going to have fun on this record. I'm going to give the fans what they fell in love with, that essence that they love about what I do. I'm going to enjoy myself and express a little more and stretch the boundaries a little bit and expand my circle. So I'm going to give more on this record.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm really excited about getting started.
I have to ask you, because when I listen to this song, it just has a classic groove. And I always wanted to know, what was the story behind this one right here? I mean, that definitely has that classic West feel.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's why I call it Pop's Cool Groove.
Mm.
Okay, it's kind of a take on my brother Popsicle and my father, my pops.
Mm.
My father turned me on to West Montgomery. My brother turned me on to the guitar. So my father used to sit in the basement, man, on weekends and just listen to me play for hours, Friday and Saturday and Sunday nights. And what he wanted to hear was West Montgomery. He wanted to hear me play along with West Montgomery.
Mm.
So that's how I really developed that feel. And this song, I wrote it as a tribute to them too, and my pops in particular, because he loved that sound. And that melody came to me. I said, man, this is one for Dad.
Mm.
That's really the energy behind
that. I mean, I hear it now. It's like when you explain that, it's like, okay, that's what I was feeling initially.
Yeah.
It's definitely got that vibe. You know, my daughter is 15 and she's a guitarist. Plays at her school of the arts, and they just did a big concert, Christmas concert, and it was 40 guitars on stage. It was absolutely incredible.
Wonderful.
Acoustic guitars.
Yeah.
All in what different? You know, you had some bass and electric as well. But what would you tell those young people who are really interested in pursuing guitar as a profession? What would you tell them?
Well, first of all, two things. One, make sure you have a deep desire to do this. It's not an easy road in terms of even getting this thing to sound good. And then after you can play it, to make a living doing it is another challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you have a deep desire that this is what you want to do. Make this your definite chief aim.
Mm.
Okay. Second thing is, I want the young guitarists to think about their right hand. Because the right hand for a guitarist is like air for the horn players.
Mm.
You can't get anything going on unless you strike those strings. So a lot of us don't spend enough time isolating that right hand and really working on the right hand so that you can accurately perform and move around that neck and strike the strings where they need to be and that whole kind of thing. So I would really, since this is so brief, I would put that in their minds. Think of your right hand as your air. So you know how the horn players, they have to blow air, or a singer, they have to come up with this air to get a sound. We got to come up with this stroke to get a sound.
Right.
So when you think about it like that, it helps you understand the importance of developing it.
Hmm. Wow. That's amazing, man. I hope, Chloe, I hope you were listening. And I'll remind you when I get home. But yeah. That was wonderful, man. That was like a sensei teaching like the young students something. Well, God bless you, Norman Brown. We appreciate you coming on down here and welcome. I haven't said it officially, but welcome to Atlanta. We're so honored and proud to have you here in our fair city, man.
Thank you so much, man. And thank you, Jamal, for having me on. Thank you, WCLK, for all you guys do. Yeah, you guys helped me build my career here. That first album, Just Between Us, I was coming in and out of here quite often.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
So,
totally.
This is a historical wonderful place, and God bless all of you, man.
No, thank you, sir. And you know what? We want to bless someone with a pair of tickets, actually, to check out the show, which is happening this upcoming Saturday over there at the historic Ebenezer Baptist Church. I have a pair of tickets for you to enjoy a Gospel According to Jazz Christmas happening Saturday, December 19th from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. at Ebenezer Baptist Church. This evening will feature performances by Kirk Whalum, Gerald Albright, Norman Brown, and many more. Caller number 7. Give me a call right now, 404-880-WCLK. Norman, can I get out of here with that David Benoit track? Because, I just want to hear it. Can I?
Please, but I got to say this before we go.
Okay.
The Gospel According to Jazz 4 is nominated for a Grammy.
Ah, congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations, Mr. Kirk Whalum. And I'm on that CD and DVD as well. I did perform on the recording, so... I just want to give my man a shout out.
Okay, well, we will speak it into existence, man. You guys are going to be walking away with a trophy, brother.
Yeah, we're going to skate on out of here now, y'all.
You trying to steal my job, Norman Brown? Dang, man. That was good radio right there, brother.
We're listening to you, dude.
You take care, Norman Brown.
All right, take care, sir.